I got to that 100% profit in like a matter of 3 or 4 days. I thought I was going to keep going because, you know, I'm right. I've been doing this for 20 years. I know what I'm doing. Came back down towards my initial investment. I removed that stop and then I got underneath my initial investment. At that point, I was so disgusted. I didn't care if I lost all of it. You're watching 1 minute charts, 8 hours out of the day. It's just ridiculous, but that's what I was doing, and it's just a vicious cycle of highs and lows.
Today's guest has a very different story than we're used to sharing here on the channel. We're going to be dissecting how the stock market is just like sports betting, the casino, the slot machine, whatever, if done in this specific way. But before we dive into that, I want to ask you for just one favor. If you've been enjoying what we've been doing here on the channel, I want to just ask that you smash that subscribe button. A lot of you aren't yet subscribed, but you're listening regularly. I promise to you that the guests will keep coming, the episodes will keep getting better, and we'll continue to spread the message that gambling addiction is real and you can recover. Hey everybody, welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Michael Bodiak. He's a program development coordinator for the Arkansas Council on Problem Gambling since last summer. He's also a small business owner, and he's here to share a cautionary tale about the stock market and the addictions that you can develop, possibly trading options. Michael, thanks for joining.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be here. Looking forward to talking to you. And
for those that don't know, kind of just like real quick, what does the Arkansas Council on Problem Gambling seek to do?
Okay, the Arkansas Problem Gambling Council seeks to bring awareness to those who have issues with gambling. We're a 501(c), so this casinos fund us to do outreach and advocate for responsible gaming and gambling throughout the state of Arkansas.
And what made you want to get involved in this work? Is it a reflection of your own story? Was it a particular calling?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I've had an issue with gambling for at least 20 years now, going on off and on. And it's just as I got involved more with wanting to reach out and help people, I was led to this this program. Just been hitting the ground running since, just trying to get the word out on what problem gambling means and what we can do to help.
Awesome. Well, I'm happy to have you here and I'm happy to be able to share your story. Why don't we start from the beginning here then? When was the first time you found yourself gambling?
Yeah, you know, it was quite a while ago. I started working for an investment banking firm right out of college. And this was sometime between 2002 and 2004. I was working for an investment banking firm in the research department, and I was learning how companies operate on Wall Street, doing research for each particular company to recommend stock to the clients that our advisors were associating with. So we would look at income statements, balance sheets, all that accounting stuff that goes on with a public company. Is something that kind of just drew me into, you know, behind the curtain to how Wall Street really operates, being able to get a firsthand look at companies' fundamentals, and then helping edit research reports for our clients on their specific recommendations.
So this was your first foray into gambling then? It was doing stock market research?
Well, it actually opened the door to stock option trading. I had just started kind of trading normal stocks like you know most people do out of college, you know, buy stock and just sit on it and not try to play the short-term volatility. But as I, you know, learned more and did more at the company, that kind of opened the door to other ways of making income, because I had to, you know, take certification tests to see if I would be able to, you know, recommend stock, you know, when I was, if I were to, you know, get further promoted. And so that involved the Series 7, which you've probably heard of, which is a lot of comprehensive questions on securities, which has a lot of information on options. So I actually learned how all that stuff works through studying for the Series 7 test, and then just dipped my toes in it, you know, shortly after that.
What was it like in the beginning? Were you finding yourself like making money really early on?
Unfortunately, yes. Like many gamblers, you start with a few wins and you think you've got it figured out. You know, stock market trading, especially high frequency trading, is kind of like an art. I like to call it like the poker of gambling from a stock market perspective, because there's a lot of strategy. You look at a lot of not only fundamental stuff, which is what I was learning at the investment banking firm, but technical analysis like support and resistance, and divergences, all that stuff you hear about if you're a trader. I learned how that worked through studying for this test. That just kind of led to me dipping my toes in after talking to a broker about options. Basically just signed a disclaimer saying, you're fully liable. We're not going to tell you, we're not going to advise you on what to do. So you're pretty much on your own when you're trading stock options. Advisors will not advise you on how to trade those because of the market risk involved with them. So of course I opened a few contracts. I was just buying covered calls and covered puts, but those essentially, if you put 500 down, you have to be willing to lose all of that investment. If you're right, though, that 500 can quickly double, triple, fourfold in a matter of weeks, if not days. And depending on your time horizon, it can be within the day trade hours. I was working, so I didn't really focus on that. I was mainly just trading 30-day contracts, some 30 to 60-day expirations. So, there's movement, but the closer you get to expiration, if you're on the wrong side of the trade, you're going to lose all of your investment. So it involved a lot of screen, in addition to trying to work. So it's a huge distraction, much like many gamblers face today. You're constantly, just looking to see what the movement of the stock is going to do while you're trying to work. So it became a distraction. Of course, I won a few, and then I kept trying to, add on to those gains, and then you start chasing losses when you're wrong. And so this kind of went on back and forth, I would say, for 3 or 4 years. I actually left the investment banking firm in 2006, so I did stop for quite a while, but then it came back about 3 or 4 years later.
So if I'm like a five-year-old, maybe a good way to explain a stock option might be that you're buying the option, the quite literally the choice of getting a stock at a later date at a particular price, and you're locking in that price. For those in the audience that are kind of maybe new to the stock market, essentially you are gambling on the movement of the entire market when you're doing this, or whatever the particular stock might be that you're buying the option on. And you're basically saying, I think in a couple months, it's going to be this price. So I'm locking in this current price on this contract so that I can make a profit. But we're talking about the ability, correct me, Michael, if I'm wrong, for that option contract to go up 10,000, 20,000, 30,000% over any given period of time, right?
Yes, that's correct. And that's what makes them so risky, why so many have been lured into, chasing this fast money, because the more volatility there is in the market, the more you're going to make. And it just really depends. If you're trading anything 30 days or less, there's going to be movement, especially as the option gets closer to expiration.
So now that we got the basics, then let's dive back into your timeline. It's now 2006. You're leaving the investment firm. You stop trading options at this point, and you go off and work a different job.
Yeah, I actually got into the mortgage industry at this point, late 2006, and I worked in the mortgage industry. So I kind of got away from it, I would say, for a couple of years, but I just happened to witness the housing crash as it was happening, because I was talking on the phone to customers all over the country who didn't know what kind of mortgage they had. And so, yeah, the market just, as some of in 2009, just took a tailspin, and it went down pretty far. And so I was like, yeah, it's a good time to get back in. So I started trading options again late in 2009, 2010. And of course, I'd hit a few good ones at the beginning, but then just trying to do what's called counter trends, which is not smart. You're trying to basically bet that the market's going to go the other direction that it's not going. And so I did that. And so, just buying calls and puts. So when you're buying puts, you're thinking the market's going to go down. And so that's what I was doing. And then I was wrong on that end. I was wrong on the call side, thinking, the market had bottomed, but it hadn't. But again, when you're messing with 30-day time frames, and then if the stock's, options expiring 2 weeks or 1 week or 5 days, you're going to have enormous volatility. It's not going to really matter what the overall market trend is. You're just chasing fast money and you're just glued to your screen constantly. And keep in mind, this was before really social media came around. So I was doing all this, you know, with a split screen, or not a split screen. I had two monitors at my desk. One, I was doing my work. The other, I had a little small window, you know, the heartbeat of the stock option and what it was doing. You know, it was very distracting. And I knew I shouldn't have been doing it, but I was doing it anyways. Luckily, I didn't lose my job over it. But yeah, it's just something that haunted me. And then it really hit rock bottom in, I would say, 2012, because I was chasing losses. I wasn't doing well. I was getting, you know, aggravated because I was losing money. That was pretty much my rock bottom point. I had taken out some cash advances on my credit card, and I was like, and maxed out one. I'm like, what am I doing? You know? And so that was kind of my rock bottom point. And so I stopped at that point, and then come back until, you know, years later. So that's what's crazy about my story. I've been doing this for 20 years, but I've gone, like right now, I'm 495 days. My last option trade was December 15th, 2023, but I've probably easily, Rob, gone 1,000 days. I've gone close to 3 years, between 2 and 3 years throughout this 20-year period without trading. So I had the willpower to do it, but I wasn't in recovery. I wasn't talking to anyone. I didn't have anyone to hold me accountable. So it was just one of these things that kept, you know, coming back throughout different seasons in my life.
And I want to get into what you're doing now to sustain your recovery. But before we get into that, I think that a lot of my audience might be watching this, and it could be one of their first times hearing that the stock market could be gambling. I want you to kind of try to illustrate for me what a day felt like when you were at that rock bottom point. What did it feel like waking up in the morning? Were you immediately jumping out of bed, checking the market, checking statistics, checking money? I know how I felt when I was sports betting, and that's how it was. As soon as I woke up, it was a shot of adrenaline. I was trying to figure out if I had to find money, or if I had money, what I was going to bet on next. What was a day in your life like as an options trader during your rock bottom?
Yeah, it was very similar. You know, just constantly on edge, and, you know, just extreme isolation. Obviously, I was ashamed. I didn't want to tell anybody about it, and I didn't. You know, luckily, I didn't get myself in too big of a hole. You know, I was still able to pay my bills. But that rock bottom point, you know, was just, and again, we're talking 13 years ago, just checking, you know, futures. And, you know, at this point, you know, we had cell phones with, you know, where you could watch videos and some apps. So, yeah, just really just a huge distraction. And the dopamine, waking up in the morning and seeing that everything's green, you know, but with options, it's just so fast because the money moves is just fast as lightning, depending on the expiration. So you can be green in the morning and 5 minutes later after the opening bell, you're down. I mean, it's just, that's just the way these options work. And so you're constantly having to, you know, be looking at your quotes, watching the news, watching headlines. And it's just, You know, you quit talking to your friends and your family, and you just isolate, and it's just a vicious cycle of highs and lows. You're just constantly trying to feel good about anything, especially when you're losing. You're just looking for that little dopamine hit to help you feel better and try to break even. You know, that's as many gamblers do when you're chasing losses. You're just like, let me just get it back, and then maybe I'll pair it back, you know, instead of putting 500 down on this option, and I'll just do 250 next time. Well, it doesn't matter. And that's kind of what I did later down the road. And I can tell you about that later, but it's still the same. You're still gambling. So if you're a first time stock market trader, just know that you have to be disciplined and trade with a plan. I'm not telling you not to gamble and trade options. It's a wonderful way to make money, but at the same time, if you don't have accountability and you are just doing it for a thrill, then it can get the best of you if you're not diligent.
To try to illustrate that point, you know, I don't imagine that in 2002, 2003, when you were dipping your toes into options, you developed an addiction at that point. You know, you were early on into it. At what point for you, if you can think back, did it shift from something that was an investment opportunity to something that was a compulsion or an addiction? Do you remember like a specific point that started to happen?
Yeah, it was probably 2009 when I got back into it after taking a break, you know, during the 06, 07, 08 timeframe. It was right after the housing crash, and it was just, I knew it was there was a huge opportunity, thinking that, okay, I've learned my lesson, I can do it now. And again, I did okay for a little bit, but the more you obsess about it and the more you try to keep making more money, then and you're just going to get, you know, frustrated and do things that you normally wouldn't do. I can just give an example. Like when you're trading, you want to use stops. And stops, basically, you set them at a set price and they protect your losses or they cap your gains. Well, a disciplined trader will use those. But the only problem with that is, depending on what happens with the stock or the market, if there's a huge low opening the next morning, your price will get filled, but it'll get filled at whatever the price level is below your, you know, number. So on the other side, you know, you're up, you want to cap or protect your profit, and you can do that. And I did that initially, you know, when I was working at the investment firm. But when your emotions get in the way, you're like, no, I don't need these stops. I want to be able to control it. You know, if that $500 investment goes down, I don't want to lose it. If I have the stop, you know, where I'm down, if I get under 400, then it stops out. But what if it stops out at 410 or 395, and then it shoots back up? You know, you just get those scenarios running through your head, like, no, let me control it. And that's where the compulsion comes in to play, especially with options. You think you have it figured out. You're dealing with hedge funds, and that was back then. And now you're dealing with algorithms. That's a whole nother thing that we can talk about later. It really messes with your mind, is the best way I can describe it. You're just looking for, if you're chasing losses, you're just looking to get that money back. Or if you make 1,000%, it's never enough. Just like when you're gambling with sports or casinos, you're never going to be satisfied when you become a compulsive gambler.
If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, just one more bet, or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries. I think a great comparison to like the stops would be, for a sports bettor, like a cash out button. Where your team is, say your team's winning, right? And you take a cash out for 85, 90% of what the bet's payout could have been. Then they go on and win. You feel this regret, like, oh, I can't believe I cashed that out. I should have left it in. That's like a built-in mechanism for sports books that it gets you to come back and make another bet. That doesn't necessarily have to exist in the stock market, which is why I always struggled with this personally, right? I know that if I go to the casino, I'm supposed to lose. If I go to the sports book, I'm supposed to lose. But there's, as far as I know, nothing in the stock market that says you have to lose more often than you win. You had mentioned something that I think is an important point here. We're up against algorithms. We're up against hedge funds when we're trading. Let's talk a little bit about that. For those in the audience that are familiar with stocks, their knowledge might end right with the big GameStop and AMC stock trades of a couple years ago. Were you involved in that at all? And if so, like, how do algorithms and hedge funds play into that?
We'll just fast forward a little bit. Before all that really came into focus, I had stopped after 2012, thinking I was had hit rock bottom. I'd stopped and then started back in 2015, 16. And, you know, I was just dipping my toes in a little bit. I was still working for the, you know, the mortgage company. And, you know, at this point, I was like, oh, I've taken 3 or 4 years off. I'm just going to do a minimal amount, you know, and just see what happens. Same thing happened that happened previous four or five years. You know, I'd win a few and then I'd lose. The frequency wasn't as much, but still, you know, I was still doing it. And at this point, I was in a new season of my life and I didn't want that to interfere with, you know, that part of my life. So it didn't last, you know, too long. Well, I remember what happened in 2020. That was when the retail trader really came to full focus with COVID. And then the algorithms, of course, were really, really going at that point in time. What was happening was if there's any particular headline, anything economic sensitive that would trigger something for whether it be a market index or a company, then the volatility would immediately pick up. Unfortunately, we saw a lot of that, you know, in 2020, just the extreme panic with what happened. But what essentially the algorithms do is just figure out a way to manipulate your mind is the easiest way I can describe it, because you think you know what's going on, but you know, now you're dealing not only, you know, with hedge funds prior to all these algorithms, you know, I'll take it a step further. Now you're dealing with AI stuff that's triggering all of the stock movement nowadays. So, you know, a lot's happened between COVID and present day trading. It's just another wrinkle that gets in your head that makes things very confusing if you're emotionally involved and you're not trading disciplined like most traders you should trade on a long-term horizon, then none of that stuff matters. But unfortunately, with stock options, you have to pay attention to your stock option, especially if you have a contract expiring in less than 30 days. And then if you're trading within a week or two, or the week of expiration, then you're watching 1 minute charts 8 hours out of the day. And that's like watching a heartbeat at a hospital. It's just ridiculous. But that's what I was doing when I was day trading, was just micromanaging very short-term movements, especially when the headlines were going wild. You know, with COVID, they were going wild. So, yeah.
I don't usually share this story because, again, this is one of the first times we're really specifically focusing on the stock market here on the channel. But when I was doing options trading during like my peak of gambling, what I would do is I would buy options right before Jerome Powell would speak, the Federal Reserve Chair. And right before he speaks, there's typically a lot of market volatility because he's going to announce if they're going to cut interest rates. And if they cut interest rates, it typically means that the markets go up. And so basically, every time that he would come on to speak, which was once every 2 months, maybe, I would take basically all the money that I had and put it on an option that the market was going to go up. And of course, it was a snag where basically they didn't lower rates for what, like a year and a half. That was, you know, my luck when it came to gambling. But did you find yourself basically at a point where you depended on the options for pleasure, to feel? Because I certainly reached a point with that, with the options, but also with my sports betting, that if I wasn't doing it, it felt bad. Like I felt like a pain almost. Do you ever reach that?
Yes. You know, that's when the addiction has a hold of you. I mean, you, you just need it. It's that dopamine hit, you know, it's just a bad thing that happens when you can't stop the urge. You know, you're constantly looking at, you know, your phone, you're looking at news stories, you're looking at futures overnight after the market closes. You know, thankfully I never got involved with that, but I mean, you can literally, just like with sports betting and casinos, do it 24/7. There's other avenues. You've got crypto, which is, you can do 24 hours, I believe. It was my drug. I mean, I don't know how to say it, you know. I mean, I've never been a heavy drinker, but I've always had this problem in the back of my head, mind, and I knew it was a problem about, you know, 6-7 years into it, but, you know, letting it drag out for 20 plus was something that I wish I could have stopped a lot sooner. But that's why I'm here, because I want to help those who might, you know, be doing this, and maybe they just started, or maybe they've been doing it since, you know, COVID for the last 5 years and have dipped their toes in and dipped out. It's just a vicious cycle. And if there's, you know, that's why I'm here, to talk to you and also help others with the problem that's out there. 'Cause it's the biggest hidden addiction, other, I think, not a lot of people are talking about. You'll hear a little bit about it in the news, especially with the volatility that's occurring this year, but a lot of people just don't see it as gambling until you start dealing with these high frequency stock options, and then you are gambling, because it's so easy to hide and lie to your family and friends that, oh, I'm just investing, it's okay. And that's what makes it even more of a challenge to get help, because you don't think you have a problem because you're just investing.
And the number of times that I told myself that's crazy. Literally the most popular forum for stock trading on earth is called Wall Street Bets. And yet we try to convince ourselves that this is highbrow, this is investing, this is strategy, this is not like casino, like this is much different. And meanwhile, a stock option is basically like a roulette spin, especially as you get to a shorter dated option. What happened that finally made you leave it behind this time around? Like, take us back to the last stock option trade that you made. What happened that day to kind of lead us here now?
Yeah, it's funny because this was the option expired 495 days ago. So the third Friday in December of, I believe it was December 15th, 2023. So my small business was kind of during a slow period. And so I was like, you know, I'm just going to see if I can, you know, do a 30 day and put X amount down and just see what happens. I think it's going to go up, but if it doesn't, I'll just cash out right at my initial investment, because I felt pretty good about the strategy. Put it down. This was probably in November, and then I got to 100% profit, and I was like, okay, it did. But the problem is, I got to that 100% profit in like a matter of 3 or 4 days of placing the trade. So I still had, you know, 25-30 days left. And so I thought I was going to keep going because, you know, I'm right. I've been doing this for 20 years. I know what I'm doing. And so I just left it. And then, of course, it came back down towards my initial investment. And I was going to sell it. And market limit or a stop order in. But I probably removed it just trying to, you know, play the control game. I'm not going to do that because they're going to stop me out and it's going to go right back up. Well, that was a mistake because I removed that stop and then I got underneath my initial investment and that was the end of it. And at that point, I was so disgusted. I didn't care if I lost all of it because I've seen the story before. I let pride get in the way. I just told myself this is going to expire at zero and I'm not going to do anything about it, but watch it. I wasn't going to put any more money towards it because I wasn't going to chase the loss. And I told myself in the back of my mind, you know, this is going to be the last time because I don't want to do this anymore. I didn't want to get back into the whole thing to begin with. You know, that's another story. But I was also doing other things at that time, like looking to further my education in ministry through our church, doing some ministry work. I was working on that and I was still running my small business. And yeah, I already had a child. I had a 4 or 5 month old at that time when that was my last bet. And I was like, I don't want to grow her to grow up and see me doing this. I'm already wasting that precious time just in the short few months that she, you know, was alive doing this. I've got to stop. All those things all together led me to finally put the nail in that this is it. Soon after that, I got involved more with the church, and we started working on some life recovery programs for our addictions throughout the church, and not all types of addictions. So I brought a unique element to the table. And so I was like, I'll work on the gambling side. And the other guys took, you know, the substance side and the behavioral side. So yeah, that kind of like gave me some purpose and got me to stop. As I went, got trained, got trained to help run this and launch this. And we launched it, the program about this time last year. It was the summer of 24. And so I've been involved with that. And then I got involved with the Arkansas Gambling Council not long after that, right around the same time, actually. So a little bit, almost a year. So yeah, that was it. And I know that there's no looking back. And now I'm more excited than ever, you know, to bring awareness through social media channels and hopefully soon to be my own website and other, you know, cool things to help those who struggle with the stock market addiction.
And we're going to be linking that in the description of this video once that website and social channels are created. So if you're watching this a little bit into the future, make sure that you're checking out the description. Michael, you said something during that just jogged like a really strong memory with me. It was that you would cash it out if it ever got back to your initial investment, is what you said basically the first day or two that the option was live, your final option. Then it came back down and it was at that break-even point just a few days later. And you said, I'd rather see this expire. I think that a lot of sports bettors can probably relate to that, especially with the cash out window. It's like, I'll cash it out if it comes back down to X amount, and then they just leave it and sit and it eventually loses. So I just want to point out again that, guys, if you're struggling with gambling, there's a lot of aspects of it that are relatable across every type of gambling. And options trading is absolutely falling into that category here. Michael, tell us how you would feel during your worst days versus how you feel now that you're in recovery.
Well, my worst days, I just felt so defeated. I just didn't want to do anything except try to figure out how am I gonna win this back? And knowing that I can't keep throwing money at this problem, it's kind of salt on the wound at that point. So yeah, feeling kind of hopeless and helpless and just sick and just frustrated. I mean, why do I keep doing this? Why can I stop for 2 or 3 years and then it comes back, being clean for a year and a half almost? I have absolutely zero desire to go back. I know that I can, do it. And now I have accountability through my small group. I do attend GA meetings online as well. I like to kind of go throughout the country and pick a few just to get some different perspective. And I'm seeing other people who have my problem. They're out there and they're starting to show their faces. So that's good. And that's why I want to have, my own website, my own socials, which will be coming soon to help keep this going. Because, if I can save somebody 10, 15, 17 years of heartache versus what I had to deal with off and on, then that's what it's all about, man. That's just helping people get help and telling them my story and that there is hope if you, do the right thing and get help.
Absolutely. And I want to leave with this. A lot of people will, and with good intention, they will say in the comments of a lot of my videos, stop gambling and start investing your money. Stop gambling on sports, stop playing roulette, stop spinning slots, and go and put your money into the stock market. How can that be done in a way that it wouldn't be just more gambling?
Yeah, this is where you have to have an advisor. You cannot do it on your own because you're just going to fall into more temptation to gamble and to not, unfortunately, trade your IRA or your 401k like a day trader, and you don't want to do that. So that's why it's super important to make sure that you get an advisor and stay with them, and also give up control. Make sure your spouse or a friend has the username and password to your brokerage account, and so that you don't have the access to go in and do it and make changes. Most of the online platforms now allow you to do all of the stuff on your own. But if that's the case and that's what you have, then you have to turn the keys over, turn the control over to a friend or a loved one if your broker can't put the restrictions on themselves.
So it's about being held accountable by others, making sure that you're not just putting yourself into new temptation and staying the hell away from options. Michael, I just want to thank you again for taking the time. If you're in the audience and you could relate to the story, make sure that you check out his links in the description once again. And if you're looking for a video of someone who's in recovery from gambling addiction, then watch this one next. Let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.